I'm Michelle Martin of NPR News. This is Ferguson and Beyond, a community conversation. We're broadcasting from Wellspring Church in Ferguson, Missouri. It's a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Thanks again to Reverend Willis Johnson for hosting us here. This is a conversation that belongs to all of us, but St. Louis Public Radio has invited some important voices from the area to lead this conversation about what happened. We've talked a lot about that in the first hour. In our second hour, we hope we'll be talking a lot more about what should happen next. With us here at Wellspring Church in Ferguson are James Knowles, who's the mayor of Ferguson. Daniel Isom is a criminology professor at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. He's a former St. Louis police chief, and he was just named director of the Missouri Department of Public Safety. He'll be taking up that post September 1st. Do I have that right? So you don't even get Labor Day off. Sad for you. Rita Days is Democratic director of the St. Louis County Election Board, a former Missouri state senator. And Kimberly McKinney is CEO of Habitat for Humanity St. Louis. Thank you all once again for joining us today, for staying with us, and thank you to the audience, both here in this rather warm sanctuary, and our broadcast audience as well. We are continuing to welcome your questions and comments, so you know, bring them on up, don't be shy. We also are taking questions on social media. Rachel, is there anything you want to flag for us that we want to pay attention to, questions that are coming in?
There was one question we got that speaks kind of to one of the unique features here in St. Louis that anyone who lives here knows, and that there are a lot of very, very small municipalities that kind of surround each other, many of whom have 21, 22, 23,000 people. So this question came to us, and this woman asked, how does the bureaucratic and political system here in St. Louis County contribute to some of the problems that we see? I heard the mayor saying that it may not have been one of my officers because we're surrounded by all these different communities and different communities having to get on board with the same general program. So my question to all the panelists then is, how does the fragmentation in St. Louis City and County make dealing with the issue of segregation and racism in St. Louis more difficult, and does it contribute at all to the problem of segregation and racism?
Chief, do you want to take that?
Well, I don't know if the division in terms of multiple municipalities contributes to segregation in St. Louis. And so I think it's a broader issue about how we think about things. You know, our mindset and how we view people, what respect we have for people. Do we see a person as an equal? Those are the real questions. It's really not about whether you got six or seven different communities. It's about us and how we think about things and how we look at people who are not the same as us, who are different than us.
Senator Days, yeah. What do you say about that?
I do think that to some degree it does contribute to the racism, because you look at the smaller communities, they're vying for dollars. They don't have enough money to sustain themselves, and so how do they do it? They go out and arrest all these people, or they give all these people tickets. You also cannot afford to hire the top-notch police officers, and so you're stuck with whatever comes along. We used to call them rent-a-cops. And so you have whatever, you know, if they graduated from the academy or wherever, you hope they have, but it contributes to that. You know, you also look at the fragmentation. You have different policies. In every one of these municipalities, you go down Natural Bridge Road and you're going to run into almost 10 or 15 different municipalities with 10 or different speed limits. And so you just go from one to the other and just hope you don't get caught in one of them. So I do think it contributes significantly to that.
We've talked a lot about what should happen now. So, you know, Chief, really, we've got to go to you here, because there have been so many questions about what happened here. And again, our job here is not to relitigate the specific incident, but the way it was responded to, like, we keep hearing over and over again that the response of law enforcement here was offensive, and a lot of people feel escalated the situation. So I'd like to know if there's something that should have been done differently.
I think in terms of the incident that happened initially, the death of Mike Brown. Just in my opinion, it appeared as if the small police department was overwhelmed by the issue at hand, did not have the resource, did not have the knowledge to deal with an officer-involved shooting. And because of that, they had to bring in another agency. Whenever you bring in another agency, it makes an issue more complex, right? You have different people in charge, and you've got to coordinate activities, investigations, and that adds a challenge. So in that terms, in a policing terms, yes, division did make a difference. It made a huge difference. If St. Louis County was
the police department who was involved or St. Louis City, both would have had all the resources to start to conduct that investigation immediately.
But what resources are you talking about here? Are you talking about resources to secure the scene? Or what I'm hearing people say is that people acted as if they were in a war zone and treated their fellow citizens as if they were terrorists. And they're saying that that's what people are saying to us.
So we're talking once the protests began.
Yes.
Okay.
The only reason I'm limiting the conversation to that is that this is a matter that is under law enforcement investigation, and since none of us was there, I don't know that we can shed any light on that,
okay.
But we can shed light on the thing that affected a lot of the people
So typically, if I was chief of police, and I'll take sort of the Occupy St. Louis protests that happened across the nation, one of the things you want to do when people want to express their First Amendment rights is to reach out to the protesters first. You want to find the leaders in the group and have dialogue and communication with them right away. What you want to do is establish some ground rules. And I hear the young lady say, we have our First Amendment rights to assemble. Yes, you do. You have the First Amendment right to assemble. But the First Amendment right is not unlimited. That's been proven by the Supreme Court. So in this situation, if someone, this is always the case that's brought up for law enforcement, jumped up right now and said, there's a fire in the church, everybody run out. That is not a First Amendment right.
Okay.
So what you want to do is establish ground rules. Okay, we want everyone to be able to protest 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But there are certain things that we collectively need to do to make sure you can accomplish that. One is, we can walk down the street, but we have to coordinate that, right? Because people need to go up and down the street. You can walk down the sidewalk and you can assemble, but we need to make sure that pedestrian traffic can go back and forth. You can do all these things, but we must make sure that businesses can continue to do business. That's what you try to do.
Okay.
You try to reach out to the protesters and allow them to have their First Amendment rights with rules, okay?
I think that people would like to hear from the mayor on this. Do you feel that something should have been done differently now that you've had a chance to think about it in the way that law enforcement here engaged with the citizens?
Well, I'll tell you this. So the first protest that started was just down the street here in front of the police department. And the first thing that our police chief did was go out and talk to many of the leaders, the clergy that were involved in that protest. And that protest remained for several weeks. It remained peaceful. It got large. It got small. It ebbed and flowed. And we were in constant contact, I think, as the chief mentioned, with the leaders and kind of the organizers of that protest. And it actually...
Let me just ask. What specifically would you like him to address? Tell me what you wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want me to address the protest?
Well, if that's what's on people's minds, then I think that's what you should talk about.
Sure. Okay.
Because the actual interaction between the two of them, but I think that a lot of people want to know. They feel that Michael Brown's remains were disrespected, that he was disrespected as a person, that his family members were treated poorly, and that can you speak to that?
I mean, the thing is, as Chief Isom said, first of all, Ferguson obviously is a very small, relatively small police department. I shouldn't say very small. But, right as soon as this happened, our chief knew that there would obviously be concern that a department that has 54 people and conducts an investigation upon itself of an officer-involved shooting could not be transparent enough for the people to be okay with, could not be unbiased enough. And that's why we engaged a larger department that could do that and a separate department that would do that right away. Can I please finish? So
we have to.
So obviously, as soon as the incident happened, we contacted St. Louis County. And as far as the investigation goes, I'll get to the ambulance as well. As far as the investigation goes, unfortunately, he was left right there so that the investigators from St. Louis County, when they could get there, could come to a scene and investigate a scene of a potential crime that was not disturbed by anyone, because we didn't want anyone to feel that there would be any sort of cover-up.
Do you think this was handled appropriately?
I can tell you this.
This was handled appropriately?
I think it's absolutely unfortunate that we have a situation where had we done it right then, taking care of Mr. Brown's body and moved him off the street and taken him away and tried to do the investigation internally, we would clearly be criticized for a cover-up. Now, we tried to be as unbiased and allow the investigators from the outside agency full access to everything so they could have a fair and impartial investigation. That precipitated him being out there longer than for a long time, and it's absolutely horrifying to the people who had to watch that. Now, I will say this. It is widely misreported that he was not given attention right away, and he was unfortunately pronounced dead. An ambulance did show up, and an ME, and there are videos that show this, did examine him and unfortunately pronounced him dead. So at that point, the scene was a crime scene. It was a crime scene that had to be investigated by a third party so that everyone involved could feel like that there was no cover-up, that there was no whitewash, and that justice would be done. And that's what we've been committed to from day one. Okay. Now, unfortunately, it precipitated an entirely unfortunate series of events, which unfortunately it was unsympathetic to those who watched. I mean,
have you ever, forgive me, apologized to his family for the way he was treated?
I have not had an opportunity, unfortunately, to meet with his family.
Why not?
Our chief did have an opportunity to meet both with his mother that day and express the condolences and the sympathies of our city and our department. We also have met with his family, and we've tried in the subsequent weeks to have meetings. Unfortunately, the family has sent representatives instead of coming themselves. But no, unfortunately, I have not had that opportunity.
Why didn't you just go to them? I mean, forgive me. I'm not trying to. Please. Why didn't you just go to them and say, as your mayor, I'm sorry, and we'll look into this? Did that not occur to you?
We've invited them to come to us. We've tried to reach out. Absolutely. Absolutely. The sympathies of the city and myself are clearly with the family.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Don't worry about it.
All right. These gentlemen, two gentlemen have been waiting very patiently. Yes, sir. Can I know who you are? You know who we are.
My name is David Jackson. I'm president of the Board of Education for the city of St. Louis. And, you know, I started off by saying, you know, I'm glad someone mentioned about Mr. Brown's body laying in the street for 4.5 hours. And I'm sure everybody in this crowd has something to say on many different topics. What this incident has done has raised an issue of unbelievable proportions in so many areas. Basically, in morality and humanistic nature of America. As a parent of two boys, it was so hard for me, 57 years old, seeing that boy lay on the ground with blood running from his body for 4.5 hours. His mother, less than 10 feet away on a sidewalk, that could not go to her son and hold her son. There was no reason in the world that should have happened. I have talked to different municipalities as far as police agencies across the country, and I'm sure the chief could attest to this. There is no reason, no type of investigation that person had to lay there in the street for 4.5 hours. Where is the humanistic nature of not only the police department, but you as a leader, sir? You should have been the first one that ran out there. I am so disappointed in you as a leader. From your comments that you told not only your residents of Ferguson, but you told the world. The world was listening to you when you stood there and made the comments that you did. It's horrible. And so I even responded on Twitter. The reason Michael Brown was killed by a Ferguson police officer, the buck stops with you. It starts with you. That's why your police chief came right behind and started another riot in your city because of his actions. And you did not say one word about him releasing that video, but about him not talking to the people that was placed in charge, such as the Missouri State Highway Patrol. You didn't talk to anybody. You didn't even remove the police chief from his duty. You had an opportunity to show not only this community, but you had an opportunity to show the world exactly what you were made of, and you didn't do that. Thank you.
Hold on. Can you hear that? Are you ready to respond? Are you ready to respond?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I think as already been said, I do not have the authority directly to remove the police chief. The city manager at this point is not ready to remove the police chief. The city council, The city manager, thanks to a law passed last year, signed by our governor, we cannot remove the police chief without a supermajority of the city council.
Sir, I'm not telling you to. I wasn't saying to remove the police chief from his position as police chief. You should have removed him from any participation in this incident. You have the power to do that. You said it earlier.
Sir,
the relationship that you have with your city manager.
Let me correct you with one thing, though. We've been removed from this entire incident for over 2 weeks. The governor has taken over charge of everything that happened along West Florissant. The Missouri State Highway Patrol had command of the unified command that controlled all of what happened along West Florissant. Our police chief was not involved in the incident that occurred where pepper spray and rubber bullets and assault weapons were used.
That
equipment is not even in the possession of the Ferguson Police Department. And so you can say what you want, but I'm telling you fact. We do not have that equipment. We have not deployed that equipment. There are many agencies who have been assisting us since that Saturday night when the unfortunate incident occurred. Now, from that point on, the tactical teams were from St. Louis City Police Department, St. Louis County Police Department, Missouri Highway Patrol. Missouri Highway Patrol were the ones that brought in the big armored vehicles that the people are calling tanks. That is absolutely... been out of my control since day one.
Hold on. We're going to have some fact-checking. We're going to have some fact-checking here from our reporter team from St. Louis Public Radio. Can either of you speak to that?
Okay, one of the things that you mentioned, which
let's hear.
Okay,
wait.
The police chief is directly under the control of the city manager in Ferguson. So that aspect, according to the charter, is what it is. But as you kind of mentioned, you have the power to tell the city manager what to do.
Jason, you know that there was a law passed last year.
That's Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio.
You know there was a law passed last year that the Missouri State Police Chiefs Association got passed.
Yeah.
Our governor signed. The Municipal League was absolutely opposed to. That does not allow the firing of our police chief without a supermajority of the council. Mm. You're familiar with that law, right?
You
cover politics in Missouri.
I do.
I'm just making sure.
Hold on a second. Did you guys want to speak? Go ahead. Let's hear from you. Can you tell us your names?
Hello. Good evening. My name is Beware.
Beware.
Before you jump to any conclusions,
yeah.
Beware means to be aware, to be conscious. Now, I'm from New York City originally, and recently a good friend of mine was killed by the police, and no one did anything. So when I saw what was going on in Ferguson on the news, I felt it wasn't my responsibility to go down and stand with my brothers because of what they was dealing with. The situation that they're dealing with is not just for Ferguson alone, it's throughout the country. And it's clear that there has been an covert war that's been waged against the black man in this country. And I don't care what anyone says that that's not the case, it's a conspiracy theory. The facts are laid out before us. And if it wasn't true, we wouldn't be here right now. Now, Mr. Mayor, as the elected official, it is clear that you failed to do your job to protect the community of Ferguson. You should be removed from your position because what you have done historically will go down as our ancestors and generations after us are reading this. They're going to see how you attack women and children and let that happen, and you stood by and you let nothing happen.
Okay.
That's not a man. And there's no disrespect to you, but a real man stands up for his community. That's why I'm in Ferguson right now. Now, you have some brothers here from the streets, and I'm hearing all these conversations going on, and no one's talking to them. No one's seeing what they're feeling. These are the brothers that get pulled over by police. These are the brothers that have to deal with the racial incidents and the racial profiling and the tear gas and the mask. And everybody's up here talking for them. And we have to let these brothers talk for themselves because they
are
the front line.
Okay. My guy, if you want to say this, is that essentially the same point, or do you have a... Do you have a different point to make, or is it essentially the same point?
My point is
Are you from New York as well?
I'm from St. Louis.
You're from St. Louis, okay.
Yeah. So, well, they call Ferguson, Missouri, but it's St. Louis, too.
I got you.
But
can we get your name?
My name's Frankie. I be all over St. Louis. My question to you is you going to step down? That's it. If you don't step down, you know how many people are going to vote just to get you down? Then that's going to stop you from getting anything else in our community because you didn't messed up everything for us, man. You ain't bring no help. You don't even know the kids inside the Ferguson district. They don't even know you. They ain't never seen you. Then you was saying on the news about I'm not in their shoes. What do you mean by that statement?
Well, thank you. A couple of questions have been asked.
So where do you live in Ferguson?
I stay on Canfield.
You stay on Canfield?
Yeah.
Okay. And one of the things that we've talked about from the start is that Canfield area, Oakmont, absolutely.
Okay, sir.
Well, I'll tell you this. No.
Let him answer your question. I'm not stepping down.
So I will not step down from office. The voters have an opportunity to relieve me when the time comes or recall me if they so choose. I have worked for many years with the surrounding communities, the local neighborhood associations, the residents here. I've lived here for 35 years. I coach wrestling here in the local schools. I've worked in the local schools in the classroom. So I do know many of the people here, most of the people here, and I'll continue to serve the people here so long as they'll have me. Now, if we haven't been able to reach out and touch you and your community, absolutely that's something we need to do over the next couple of years.
So why did this incident have to occur for all this to happen? When I had to get shot in the back. So that means I'm going this way and they're aiming at me.
Who shot you?
The people you put out there.
Let me see.
A Ferguson cop shot you.
Were you really?
Police, man. We was marching.
When?
Y'all said it was a curfew at 8. Y'all said it was a curfew at 12. At 12.
So,
we was out there at 8. On the front line, it was key.
And what did they shoot you with?
What they shot me with? How do I know when they throwing grenades?
But again, so that's...
It's right there. Look at that. I got a mark on me. How many times do I have to deal with this?
Again,
I don't know what it is because they shot behind us where they trying to push us to.
And this happened during
Let me explain again.
How can you explain this? The tactical teams.
I'm glad
to answer for anything that any of our officers have done. The tactical teams, those who are deploying those sorts of less than lethal weapons, are not Ferguson officers.
The mayor knows who I am. I got him on camera saying
that he wishes to step down if we so please. So for him to get up here now and say that, that's a lie. This is on camera.
Okay. Well, asked and answered. He's been asked if he will step down, and the mayor says he will not.
No, he will not.
So... And the election is in November.
I have been in contact with residents from day one. There are the 22,000 residents in our community. I've been out talking to residents, talking to our neighborhood leaders. They have urged me to stay.
Sister Martin.
I have
Well, can
more
I just ask you
support.
This, Mr. Mayor, so, though? Can I just ask you to speak to not just what was said, but the intent behind it? And what I am hearing a lot of people say is very deeply disappointed that they don't feel you understand their issues. They don't feel you understand their circumstances, and they don't feel that you are feeling their pain. I mean, they've asked you questions, and you keep talking. Forgive me. You have every right to answer any question in the way that you would wish, but you keep talking about tactical teams, and what I hear them saying is they are very hurt, and they don't feel you are hearing their hurt.
I absolutely do, and here's what I want people to understand, and they're, so far, I have not heard anyone listen to this. That the issues about being injured by the tactical teams, having snipers pointed at you, having assault weapons pointed in your face, having tear gas thrown at you, having rubber bullets shot or beanbags shot at you, I've never felt that, and I don't know that I ever will, but I absolutely understand the anger. However, I did not.
However,
it is important to recognize, again, that none of that was done by anyone under my command.
Okay, let me ask you this. Wait, hold on a second. Where were you when all this was happening?
I was at the police department most of the time.
Can't talk when we're yelling. Where were you when this was happening? You were at police headquarters?
Depending on which event.
When the tear gas was happening? When people were being...
Well, it happened over several nights. I mean, there were times where I was at the department. There were times where I was at home. But, I mean...
You were at home, or you were at the police department. But I think the question is, why weren't you with your constituents?
I think clearly the situation was volatile. And an issue that... Yeah. An issue that law enforcement and myself and others have said from day one was that even interspersed between all of the peaceful protesters, there were, unfortunately, agitators who had come out to cause problems. We had asked residents to please come out and protest during the day. Please take your opportunity to come out and protest, exercise your First Amendment right, but then we'd ask people to go home by dark because, unfortunately, as the nighttime fell, some of the protests had been infiltrated by those who weren't out there for the same reasons, but to rather cause problems. That was something that we asked them to do. Clearly, I'm not going to go out against my own wishes in after dark to join something that we already knew was a volatile situation.
Okay. Reverend Johnson would like to be heard. Yeah. Reverend Johnson. Go ahead, Reverend Johnson.
Mayor Knowles, and please understand, I'm not trying to save you. I'm trying to save this community with this statement because what is happening right now, if you can't feel it, it ain't because the air ain't on.
Well, you tell us.
The temperature is rising in this room.
Make it clear if it's not clear.
What you got to hear, sir, in all of this is that you're not going to be able to explain away everything. But it would help to start the healing process. It would help to unplug this pot that's about to boil over in here that will roll to the street if we're not careful, is the reality of acknowledging. Don't. And I say this with all due respect. I'm not trying to set you up. But man, I know you didn't do everything and it wasn't your police force or whatever, but acknowledge that what happened. That's the first thing. Because that's the first thing that most of these young people and anybody who was out there, we cannot deny what has happened. The second thing is you ain't gotta necessarily accept it personally, but we all have to accept, especially as leaders in this community, have to accept the responsibility to do something about it. And unfortunately, we can't keep pointing to other things or being convenient and hiding because you've tripped yourself up. We were here about a half an hour ago, and you spoke real tough about all the stuff you could fix. And then the next thing you did when somebody challenged you was go behind the city manager. And I'm just trying to help you understand that because that's what is boiling over in this room right now.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Reverend, let's again. I just acknowledged that I could never feel what went on out there, and I know that it absolutely. I know that it absolutely has to be traumatic from anyone involved. Absolutely. Yeah. There's no tripping up here. What I said was I will take every step that I can take. And that's why we're here, is because I'm owning up to the issues that are facing not only our community but the region.
This is the first thing, though, to help it out a little bit, just condense it. We know what's regionally happening. Right. We know there's a rippling effect. Yeah. Okay. We want to deal right now with the fact that this is Ferguson. I mean, and every time, unfortunately, every time you say that, it's pressing people, it's piercing people, because then it gets us to a place where it's like, well, it's not really our fault, and even if we do something about it, it's not, I mean, and I'm just telling you what I'm getting on the side of my ear and what I've been hearing when young people have been in this church this week, when I was standing outside with them, and I know nobody's telling you to go run to the front line and get shot too, okay, because there's a lot of people in here yelling who weren't there at 1:30 in the morning, and I'll be honest, I wasn't there at 1:30 every morning, okay, but let's be real about it, and there's got to be a greater level of not only sympathy, but empathy expressed. And they're looking to you, even though if it's not your fault, because you're the leader. You're the leader. Well, you're responsible.
Yeah.
I'm standing here, and I'm sitting here with you, and I understand it because I'm running out there too. It's not my first cup of tea.
Kimberly and the chief have been dying to get into this conversation.
Okay,
poor choice of words,
no
but
apologies.
They've been eager to get into the conversation. And in the time that we have left, we're going to move along into what needs to happen. And so, Kimberly, go start us off.
Okay, respectfully to the mayor and as the only other white panelist, acknowledging white privilege and that you don't feel the rubber bullets isn't enough. It's just not. For this community to do any type of community building, there first is going to have to be a whole lot of community healing. And I appreciate that I was asked to be here. I think it was way preliminary. I love St. Louis Public Radio. I hope that they will reconvene a panel that is all about the policing issues, that there is the youth voice at the table because it is desperately missing. It is time for this community, holistically, I'm not pointing out Ferguson, to listen with the intent of understanding, not listen with the intent to respond. And that's going to have to happen before there even is a what's next.
Okay. Chief? That was Kimberly McKinney. Chief?
So I want to echo what Pastor Johnson has said, and I'm listening to the crowd, and I think one thing all of us know is that Michael Brown should not have laid out there for 4 hours on the street.
Amen.
So you've got to acknowledge that that was wrong and that you're sorry for it, because just from a human standpoint, and if you want to just take it from a policing standpoint, it wasn't appropriate. I don't care under any circumstances what kind of investigation was going on. A person's body does not lay out in the street for 4 hours. So we got to acknowledge that. But the second thing that I'm hearing from young people is that we need to be up here speaking. We need to be talking. And the other part is that police officers need to be up here speaking and talking. The young yes. people need to be sitting down face-to-face, expressing how they feel to the actual officer on the ground. We'll protect you.
We will.
We will be in the room as you all begin to build dialogue together. What happens, and what I've seen so many times over the course of problems with the community and the police, and usually it's youth and police officers, is we get in the room talking. And there's never, that interaction between that cop on the street and that young person who is an experienced. And so I think as we move forward, we got to find ways for both of those groups to get together and have an understanding of each other. And I think that could be a powerful thing moving forward, because they never, only time they come in contact is when the officer is in an authoritarian position,
yeah.
right? And that's no way to have a dialogue. That's no way to have an understanding. So that's something that I think we ought to be doing going forward.
We need to take a short break. We hope you'll stay with us. When we come back, we will have more from Ferguson. And you can join this conversation on Twitter using the hashtag #BeyondFerguson. Please stick around. I'm Michelle Martin of NPR News, and this is Ferguson and Beyond, a community conversation. We're broadcasting from Wellspring Church in Ferguson, Missouri. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, and thanks again to Reverend Willis Johnson for hosting us here. We have two more folks who want to step up. I'm hearing John and John Powell, and then Joe Pritchard both want to be heard. And then we're going to try to move into our final phase of our conversation, and thank you all for your patience and for being very real, but also trying to get everything out that needs to be said. So thank you. Go ahead.
I want to thank Michelle for being here and for KWMU and for all of you. I know this is probably unpopular to say, but thank you, Mr. Mayor, for being here as well. I'm a teacher, and I'm going to give the microphone, my time, over to a young person, because I think this is really important to have young people speak. The only thing that I would say is that if we're going to go forward, and I'm interested in having more discussions about this, we've got to be more respectful of each other. And when we say we want an answer, that we will listen to people. Now, okay. Would a young person please come forward and take...
Go ahead, tell me who you are.
Hi, I'm Janetta.
Hey, Janetta.
I was out here... This is a church, right? So I have a testimony. I've been out here every day since... What month are we in? August 9th, when Michael Brown was shot and murdered. I got out of my bed. I live across the bridge in St. Peter's, and I came down because I saw that baby laying in the floor with blood leaking out of him for 4 hours. When I got down there, the Ferguson Police Department were still posted across the way from West Florissant. Sunday, we went to the police department and the fire station to protest. It was peaceful, that's true. But there were still police officers, Ferguson, St. Louis County, who else is out there?
Highway Patrol.
Almost every it was a few, it was multiple police departments out there with police dogs at a peaceful protest with babies and children in broad daylight early in the morning. How is that effective? If we are coming here to protest a murder and you meet us with police dogs, not only that, it gets better. We go to a candlelight vigil Sunday evening. I can't even light my candle because we are coming down Ferguson Drive or Road, whatever it's called, and there are SWAT standing there with batons, they had the big guns, which Twitter had to tell me what kind of guns they were because I took pictures of them and I had no idea what I was looking at. But they were M16s, is what I was told. They had the riot gear with the full body, everything. At a candlelight vigil. Mm-hmm. The police were not invited to that, I don't believe, but you came to a community that is grieving for a child in riot gear, full body, and you wonder why riots or any type of aggravation or aggressiveness started. You all incited a riot. You did that on purpose. I'm not done, ma'am.
Is she talking too?
Monday night, the following Monday, I got shot while standing in someone's front yard trying to hand out water to the people in the mm-hmm. neighborhood protesting on Nesbitt, shot in my left shoulder with a rubber bullet. I've never been shot with anything in my life. Mm. I don't do anything that requires me to ever be shot.
No, that's right.
I'm college educated. I don't do anything but mind my business. I came out here because Mike Brown could be my son one day. I don't have children, and I hope that no one, a police officer or any other, would ever lay my son out and have him 4.5 hours on the ground. That's why I'm mad and I'm involved. And not only that, I got shot. I got sprayed with tear gas about 3 or 4 times. We have that on audio, video. It's on Tumblr. I have notes on my phone, everything. The whole time while we were out there, all those nights protesting peacefully, the police were enticing an argument. I have my phone out, apparently a phone to Ferguson Police Department, St. Louis County, St. Louis City, and every other municipality that was out there, Fenton, all the way by Six Flags. What are they even doing out here? My phone apparently must be a gun because I have my phone out like this, and the armor trucks, I can see the sniper pointing it at me. I have my phone pointed at police officers when I catch them laughing and making jokes, and I take pictures of it because apparently you think it's funny to point guns at babies and children and toddlers. That's funny. Apparently that's okay. A joke.
Does your friend want to talk to you?
Everybody.
Did she want to talk? Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell us your name.
Hi, I'm Ashley Yates. If anybody follows me on anything, it's Brown Blaze, because a lot of people have seen these videos. Hmm. I just have a quick question for you, Mayor. What day was Ferguson PD pulled out?
Pulled off of West Florissant or off of, because we maintain the presence on South Florissant Road, where the protests were across from the police department.
What day was their presence no longer involved with
the
protests?
Tactical Command, when the tech teams took over, I believe, that was either Saturday night or Sunday night when the tactical teams took over. They had control. St. Louis County at that point had control.
What Saturday? Because we're going on 3 weeks now. I need you to give me a date.
We're going on 3 weeks now. When the St. Louis County tactical team showed up and the highway patrol showed up, I'm not really positive who the command was on Saturday night of the incident.
But you are talking about when the highway patrol showed up, right?
Highway patrol was there immediately.
Okay, watch this real quick. Hold on.
Highway patrol was there immediately.
They were there immediately?
Yes.
Well, Ashley, why don't you tell us where you're going? My point with this is
Michael Brown was murdered on August 9th. Mm-hmm. I was out there August 9th and August 10th. August 13th, when you shut down West Florissant, we were on Chambers in West Florissant, and we still got gassed. That was Tuesday. That was not last Saturday when the highway patrol came. Tell me I'm lying.
The highway patrol was there. The highway patrol officers and their tactical teams and the Bear, the big armored vehicle, was there within a day. So the command of the highway patrol did not take over, I think, until maybe that Wednesday, that 3 or 4 days after that. It was either Tuesday or Wednesday.
So who gassed me on Tuesday?
So, again, unfortunately, St. Louis County Police Department, Missouri State Highway Patrol was there. They were not in command, but they were there earlier, and so was St. Louis City SWAT. They were all part of the groups that utilized some of that.
Forgive me, Mayor. I think we want to... Ashley, why don't you move us forward? Tell us what you really think we need to know this evening?
I think what the Reverend was saying is true. We have to start with accountability. I have gone to so many of these, and everyone sits up there that played a part in it, that played a role, that has some responsibility to bear, and they beat around the bush. And everybody puts their hands up and goes, that wasn't my guy. Those weren't my guys. That wasn't my police. It was them. It was the other ones. So we have to start with the accountability. And if you're going to be a leader, I think you learn very early that when people do well, you let them take the response, you let them get the praise. And when they do poorly, you take that burden and that responsibility. You learn that. But everyone up here that's calling themselves a leader is shucking around, beating around the bush, and no one's telling us who was really responsible. We were out there. We know what happened. We got gassed. We got rubber bullets shot at us. We know what happened. We want to know why. Who's responsible? And if no one wants to take responsibility, we're starting to hold everybody responsible. Please believe me. I'm coming for everybody. And
what
we're serious.
Ashley, what does that mean?
We're serious.
But move it forward. What needs to happen so that a year from now, we're having a different conversation?
Firstly, the accountability and the acknowledgement of what happens. I'm just going to say this real quick.
No, I want to.
Because I have not heard anybody talk about the community and cleaning up the tear gas residue that's there. That is toxic. That's toxic. But because you're not acknowledging the extent of what happened and how much you threw it down residential streets, it wasn't just West Florissant, but because you don't acknowledge that, you won't take that accountability, that responsibility. We can't even talk about how to heal because you won't acknowledge the hurt.
And I'm done.
Okay. All right, Reverend. Go ahead. Reverend Willis.
And
go ahead.
You know, we got to start now, and I can't verify this because I'm not outside, but I just got a text message from my staff and someone from your agency as well who is watching Ferguson police officers outside right now, checking license plates. Now, again, I don't say this to be incendiary. I don't say this to incite anything. But what I am saying is this, is that from with that kind of understanding and what everybody is saying, how to go forward is first and foremost, we have to acknowledge that there is some sort of problem in this community. And yes, we may be operating under a hermeneutic of suspicion. We may be paranoid. But we got a whole lot of reason and a whole lot of record, not just in Ferguson, but in this country to be so. And so I just say that the way we go forward, we cannot, I'm sorry, Sister Martin, and this is not to raise up Wellspring or whatever, but tonight was not for the cameras. Tonight was not because we got an invitation from a good friend. This is what we have. This is what we will continue to do. This is what we're going to do tomorrow, specifically for young people at 6 o'clock. We have to continue the dialogue. We've got to continue to fight. And we've got to find a way. Again, this is not your doing or, you know, I'm not saying you're part of a conspiracy theorem or anything. No. But we do have to understand that people, if it ain't right and if it's incorrect, then I apologize. But on good source, this, and I know this because I live in this community. And, yes, I, too, have been stopped by the police. So I'm concerned. That's a concerning situation right now as we sit here.
We have time for one more person who wanted to speak. Who was up? Oh, Mr. Pritchard. Yeah. Go ahead.
I delayed mine because I thought it was more important for these girls to speak. I drove up from Festus. I was a teacher in the school system from which your governor graduated. Mr. Isom, I hope you and Michael Jones or somebody can help finish his education as best you can up there. And I've also been a musician for 50 years, and I want to tell you that there's two things that have political impact. One of them, of course, you organize, you vote, and you elect really good people that are going to fight for you, but there's a deeper thing about political impact, and it was, you might have read that they looked at all the music and how it affected people politically. The number one place went to Marvin Gaye for What's Going On. And I think you need to keep an eye on what's happening with this mania of testing everything, which is affecting teachers and students, and when they should be getting a full curriculum that emphasizes everything they need to be, no, not just enough stuff to pass tests. And just fight as hard as you can for the good people you've elected to lobby for the best possible school, and you're going to have a better future for it.
Let's keep going with Dr. Higginbotham, did you have a minute? We were talking about what needs to happen next. Joe Pritchard started off, Ashley started us off with what needs to happen. Ashley started us off saying accountability needs to happen. Joe Pritchard started off with saying we need to do a lot of things.
This here is
Mr. Higginbotham?
This here is my third riot. I was part of the Watts riot, August 11th, 1965. It was in my backyard in Los Angeles. I was part of it when the night Dr. King was murdered, April the 4th, 1968. It was my 10-year-old birthday present. And I made a decision that night that I would find out why Doc was murdered, and I would develop a program, a process that can help rebuild our communities. So I've been on a mission for a while. And I came here to the city of Ferguson over about 2.5 years ago to talk with their economic development person, to share with them a bottom-up model that will close the income gap and address the social issues that are in our communities. And unfortunately, they said what you had is too powerful and it includes too many people in the process. And that's what we have shifted from an industrial-based society to a new knowledge-based economy. So we're in a whole new different system. This is what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. What programs or processes do you have in place to help the descendants of American slaves, because that's what it is, it's an economic issue, move them from the agrarian age thinking, their slave mentality, to this new knowledge-based economy to help the people be empowered?
That was Dr. Gerald Higginbotham, who's an economic development specialist. We are down to our last couple of minutes. It's been a very powerful evening, and I thank all of you who participated. I thank all of you who were here with your presence. I want to hear a closing thought from each of you. I want to hear what you think we need to do to have the kind of community that you want. Reverend Johnson, I'm going to end with you. So we're going to go this way. Mayor, thank you for coming. I know this wasn't easy for you. These are your constituents, by and large. I guess I have one more question for you before I ask you for your closing thought, which is, did you hear anything here tonight that really touched you?
Well, I think, you know, from the start, it's been hard to understand because, as was mentioned, I mean, I'm white, and I do have the white privilege, and I will say this. It is something that I've recognized. There's a great group in town called Focus St. Louis who does a leadership program. We spent an entire weekend talking about race as part of our program. And it's something very difficult for people to talk about. It's something, even as someone who grew up here, grew up as a member of a diverse community, not really seeing the difference because I grew up in a community, went to a high school that was, you know, 50-50, majority African-American. We didn't have the tension so much between us. So it was really hard for me to understand that until I sat through that weekend. I will say this. I do sympathize. I do empathize as best as I can, having even with the background that I have with what's being said. I hope people would understand that I clearly do want to reach out, okay? That's what I've done. That's why I've stayed in this community. That's why I'm active in the community, in the neighborhoods. That's why I coach the kids that I coach, and I dedicate my life to that. So what needs to happen now?
And I think people would be particularly interested in what you plan to do to move the community forward.
Well, as the city council is currently discussing several initiatives that we would hope first that would bring back confidence not only in the city government, but also in our police department. Number one, establishing a police commission to help oversee the policies and procedures of the police department, a citizen-led commission. So that is something that we have agreed on. We are moving forward on, obviously, the dash cameras and currently the vest cameras to help bring back some of that confidence that have been lost with the citizens.
What mechanism do you have in place to hear from people who feel that those steps are not sufficient? What is their way of addressing this?
We have a great program in Ferguson called the Ferguson Youth Initiative, and we'd encourage anybody from Ferguson or anybody from the surrounding area to come and be part of the organization and help give back to us. We also have a student advisory board, the high schools and the schools here in Ferguson. People from those schools can serve as an advisory board member, a board of the city, to give advice to our community. And so the Ferguson Youth Advisory Board, the Ferguson Youth Initiative are all avenues that have been in place for the past couple years. We encourage people to come be part of that because we value their input, because we value them being part of our community. So those are in place. We encourage people to take advantage of that, be part of it, and we'll continue to move forward because we have to do a little bit more listening before we can accomplish all of what's been going on, accomplish the goals that we have.
Yes, sir. No.
I will say this. I mean anyone who clearly feels that they have been wronged, I mean I would hope that you understand my sincerest apologies if you've been wronged. And so Any officer under my charge, I absolutely will again hold accountable. And so,
okay. All right, Senator Rita Days, what needs to happen?
Well, this has been a long, long night, and a lot of things have been said, but I think we need to get back to the basics of the fact that my people are not respected. They are not respected by police. They are not respected by any of the systems that we have. There's a conspiracy of division, and that's essentially what I feel right now. If you look at the schools, which schools are in trouble? Those are schools that with predominantly people that look like me. You look at our neighborhoods, you have differences. The young lady spoke of Pembroke. That's the white side of Ferguson. She's absolutely right. But what does the other side of Ferguson look like? And not just Ferguson. All the other municipalities, it's a division. I have to look at white flight, because you don't want to be in a community with the rest of African Americans, people that look like me. You don't want to be there. So you move out to wherever it is that you go. Pretty soon you'll be in the river. But you have to look at these things, and you have to acknowledge these things before we can even have a conversation on that. Okay. You look at where we shop. You look at our grocery stores in our communities, yes. And you look at the grocery stores in Ladue and Clayton. They don't look the same. And so I think that before we move any further, we have to acknowledge these differences. And I think that's what the majority of the people want. Acknowledge it. Say it is happening. Say we need to fix that. We need to integrate our communities, our schools. It has to happen. Otherwise, you're going to have a division north that's going to be predominantly black, division south, and you're not bringing people together in that venue. So,
Senator Days, thank you. Chief Isom. Best wishes in your new responsibilities. I think that everyone here hopes that you will be successful in your work and your new role. Final thought from you. What needs to happen next?
So as I listen to everyone out here, especially the young people, I just feel sorrow. I mean, I feel sorry that, as a leader in St. Louis, that we haven't done a really good job. And so, I felt that it was my mission in life to address issues like this, but it doesn't seem as if that we've made significant progress. So I'm looking in the mirror, that's what I'm doing, at myself, to see what I could do better. And holding myself accountable. But what I will tell you is, even though you might be in a position of leadership, you need help, right? And so all the passion, all the ideas that are coming out here today, when people are pushing for change, you need to be out there helping them, pushing behind them. One person can't get this done. It has to be a collective approach. So I'm redoubling my effort to hold myself accountable and see what I can do to make it better. But I'm going to tell you, I can't do it by myself, and it has to be a collective group pushing for change.
Chief Isom, Daniel Isom. Kimberly McKinney, CEO of Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, a final thought from you. What needs to happen?
I am blessed to represent a community building agency, and community building for us means a world where everyone has a decent place to live. A decent place to live isn't just the structure, the roof over your head. It's being treated like human beings. It's being treated like part of the human race. Regardless of your race, I look across this crowd and I see such a diverse audience. This isn't a black white thing, other than where we're dealing with all of the policing issues. I challenge this group to convene again, and it be the young people, and it be the cops on the street that Chief Isom spoke about. If relationships begin with talking with one another, relationships at Habitat begin side by side on a build site, learning that you really have a whole lot more in common than you have different. And until that bridge is taken down and those conversations take place, this isn't going to change anything.
Reverend Willis Johnson, you were kind enough to host us here for this conversation. Let me just take one moment to thank you all again. Thank St. Louis Public Radio for convening this. Thank you for inviting me. Thank all of our team from St. Louis Public Radio, my team from NPR in Washington. And Reverend Johnson, I want the last voice that is heard to be yours. You've been listening to Ferguson and Beyond, a community conversation. This has been a production of St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Michelle Martin of NPR News. We've been here at Wellspring Church with Reverend Willis Johnson and a distinguished panel of guests. You can follow this conversation on Twitter using the hashtag #BeyondFerguson. We hope this is just the beginning of the dialogue. And I want to say again that I am grateful and humbled to have been included. If you invite me back, I will come. So thank you for this, Reverend Willis. Reverend Willis, a final thought from you, if you would.
Very quickly, I'm reminded of a story about a brother who was in a bad situation, and he got some help. He couldn't move. He was a paralytic, according to the story I read, and he couldn't move. He couldn't help himself. But there were some brothers, other brothers around, who realized that he needed some help. And they weren't doctors, but they knew where to take him to get some help. And so together, these brothers got together, picked up a mat, and went to a place to present him where he could get some help. And when he got there, they had some challenges and some things that they were confronted with. I hope tonight, the lesson that was learned in that story, I can't share it all, but tonight I hope that we have realized, not just by being here, but we will continue to realize that we need to dare to care. Our community's in trauma. We need not only to stabilize it, but we need to heal it. And it's going to take all of us grabbing at least a piece of the fabric of the work and carrying this issue, these problems, to the places where they need to go, where they can be resolved and addressed in a healthy and holistic manner. We've got to dare to care. Not only do we have to dare to care, we've got to defy convention. We've got to get out of this box thinking and this traditional ways. And matter of fact, if there's some things the way they are that are not right, we need to change them, whether that's politically, socially, whatever the case may be, economically. We need to dare to care. We need to defy convention. But most of all, we need to demonstrate some commitment. And just coming here tonight is not enough. Just going out in the streets for the last 12 or 13 days, going up and down, whether that was just holding your hands or throwing tear gas back or just yelling, is not enough. We've got a long struggle ahead of us. We've got great work to do. At the end of that story, they couldn't get through the front door, Sister Martin, because there was a crowd. There was a whole lot of people yelling, and they couldn't get through the front door to the source of the help. So they decided to go on the roof. They tore the roof off the mother, and they lowered their brother down before the help that could help them. And the story says that when the helper saw their faith, the man was healed. There's something that's going to happen when we demonstrate commitment. This community, this nation, this world will change and become better because of what's going to take place by the faith for Ferguson that we express, we exhibit, and we execute. So I am hurt. Sometimes I feel a little helpless, but I'm hopeful because I know there's a better day.
Reverend Johnson, thank
you. Audio from Ferguson and Beyond, a community conversation, is available online at stlpublicradio.org and is being distributed by PRX. Ferguson and Beyond, a community conversation, is a production of St. Louis Public Radio.